The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
And my ability to compartmentalize became a problem. I had always been able to go to work, be where I needed to be at work, separate that emotional side. And some stuff had happened where I wasn't able to do that. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't able to breathe. I wasn't able to work. I was having panic attacks and anxiety attacks. And
stress does that.
And yeah, really needed. And a lot of it came from my entire life had been graduate high school, go to college, graduate college, go to law school, graduate law school, take the bar. Well, what's after the bar?
Right.
Well, it's just life.
Right.
Right. And then, eventually you wake up and you're like, every single day I'm living this life. And when does it change? When does that happy moment come?
Right.
So
how old were you at this point? Let's say you're probably
34.
34. Okay.
Yeah. And to be clear, like I love the law and I love being an attorney. So when I talk about this, a lot of times it feels like I'm saying, man, I wish I never would have gone down this path. No, I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
I just know it's not my forever passion, right? It's not my forever life.
Right. So
during this breakdown, I started going to therapy and I remember being in my therapist's office about 6 months in and opening up to her and saying, all I've ever wanted to be my entire life is successful. And I feel like such a failure.
Right.
And she stepped back and she said, you have a six-figure income. You have a law degree. You're the first person in your family to go to college. You're respected in your profession. What exactly does success mean to you?
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, my name's Amber Furman, recovering perfectionist and serial accomplisher. I'm also an attorney, a success architect, and the host of the More Than Corporate podcast. My mission is to help you understand that you have the ability to design your best life and you owe it to yourself to have the courage to live it. Go build the blueprint for your life, surround yourself with people who can help you get out of your comfort zone and live the life you've always wanted.
All right, Amber. So I've been looking forward to this when, I found out Rachel paired us up. Because, you know, I'm kind of, not envious, but you know, I'm kind of doing what you're doing. Like I also have a law practice. And I also, it's not the favorite thing that I do for a living. Well, it is the only thing I do for a living, but it's not the favorite thing I do. Right. And I you know, about 2 years ago, I got turned on to podcasting, podcasting myself. And I've been, I don't know, 150 episodes in and whatever. So I was very excited to talk to you. And you're also an on-air personality now. So you're famous. You signed your book for me when you get
I
the
mean,
chance.
Famous but, or infamous, I'm not sure which one.
Well, it's
find
the same
out later.
Thing, as far as I'm concerned. But maybe let's go back with, you know, your background, why you got into law, all the things, and then how you kind of, because you're NLP trained, I mean, you really went into this like full board, you know? So I'd like to know the whole kind of story and how we got to where we are, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. And I'd cool. love to dig into that. I, first of all, love the name of your show, The Accidental Entrepreneur.
You know, I am in a trademark battle right now with Entrepreneur Magazine. They don't like that I filed the trademark with the word
of
entrepreneur.
Of course not.
They chase anybody who uses the word entrepreneur. So
yeah, of course
they
don't.
See if I can settle that. It might become accidental entrepreneurship. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I have faith in you.
Yeah,
I feel like, though, very similar to you, that I have been looking forward to this interview, because I think that as attorneys, like, we hear people talk about like people they go to battle with, right? And the bonds that they have. And we can try to explain what it's like to really be an attorney to somebody. And it's
yeah,
something
it's not the
you don't
same.
Understand until you're there. So
right.
when I'm having these conversations with people and I'm saying, you know, the six-figure income didn't fulfill me, the eternal title didn't fulfill me, they look at me like I have four heads.
Right. Like, why? And you're a
yeah,
lawyer.
Exactly. Because
yeah.
apparently, like, lawyer comes with this automatic happiness.
In
which
their
is,
mind.
Yeah. Which yeah. is where the problem all kind of started for me. So to answer your question, we'll go way back. I grew up in a super small town. I always knew I wanted to be successful. I just didn't know what that meant. And nobody really asked me.
And you're in the Midwest, right? Because you said you're an hour or someone. No, you're on the West Coast, right?
I'm on the West Coast. I grew up in Idaho. I live in Vegas now.
And
I grew up in like that all-American family, right? Like my parents, until my dad passed away when I was 18, my parents were married and right. living together. I was the oldest of three. I had two brothers. I was the only girl. Like, it explains so much about my tomboy.
What do you do in Idaho? You farm potatoes? I mean, do they do anything else?
You know, I watched other people farm potatoes. I just, I just got the community element and the love and avoided, the religion side of it, which is a whole nother conversation.
Right, like Utah. Is how big, you said you're a small town. How big was your town?
1,200 people.
That's really small.
Yeah,
my high school
really
was
small.
That size. Yeah.
Yeah. I graduated with 80 people and I had known them since kindergarten. Like, I can
wow.
look at my kindergarten picture.
Yeah, you knew everybody.
High school graduation pictures, and it's the same people almost in the exact same order.
That's great. Like, my high school now with my kids
left.
Is over 2,000 kids.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Now, our town just grew to 2,000 people. So
took a while.
My mom hadn't graduated from high school at that point in time. She's gone back and got her GED now and done some college classes. But when I was growing up, she was not a high school graduate. My dad had never been to college. I was the oldest grandchild and the oldest child. And I just had this idea that I wanted something that nobody in my family had. And I don't really know where that came from, other than this idea that to me, because I'm an 80s baby, and during that generation, success equaled education and prestige, right? So the more degrees you could get, the more titles you could get,
right,
the more successful you would be. And that was kind of pushed through education. And
my last interview was the same thing. He went through the same stuff. Become a doctor because you're a loser if you don't. You know.
Exactly. Like, what title are you going to get now? To kind of go off script here for just a minute. Not that there's a script, but, I was scanning through online dating profiles about a year and a half ago, 'cause I feel like that's the only way to meet people now, apparently.
Especially with the pandemic.
And somebody's tagline, when it said, "What are you doing with your life right now?" And his answer was, recovering from collecting letters after my name. And I thought, how amazing is that? Like, we spend our entire lives becoming something.
Yeah.
And then we enter this area of our life where I'm at right now, where you unbecome that.
Yeah.
For the purpose of living
yourself.
What you want to be, right? So I decided I wanted to be successful. I thought that was computer programming. I went to Idaho State University for computer programming. My dad told me I would hate it and that I should go to law school. My first year of college, my dad was killed in a work accident. And
oh, I'm so
it
sorry.
Shattered my world. I had a string of loss in my family starting from the age of 8, and he was just kind of that icing on the cake of unconsciously building this belief that people don't stick around in your life, that
right.
you can't rely on anybody
yeah, you
because
start
eventually
to believe
they're
going
to disappear.
Right.
And as the first person in my family to go to college, nobody actually knows what it's like, but everybody thinks they do. So they tell me that if I quit going to college, I'll never go back. right? I'm sure everybody's heard that. So instead of taking the time off that I needed to grieve the loss of my dad,
you just went right in.
I just went back and I failed classes over and over and over again until I failed out of undergrad and had like a 1.5 GPA.
That would do it.
Yeah. And you know, it's completely reasonable. And at the same time,
well, weren't ready emotionally and mentally. Yeah. You know? Can't carry that baggage to those
It's crazy because the person where A's and B's came without opening a book, you know, we already have that transition period when you get into college that it's harder than high school was.
A lot harder. Yeah.
And then you add this on top of it. And then I didn't have a great relationship with my mom and I felt alienated from my family and it was the perfect storm. So that idea that I was about to fail out of undergrad, that I was not going to have the successful life I wanted, it led me to realize that I had to do something. And we were in the middle of suing the state of Idaho. We had so much stuff going on. And I thought, maybe my dad was onto something. Let me just try this law school thing. And so going to law school was this perfect storm of interest. I loved John Grisham books, this unrealistic idea of what being an attorney was going to be. Combined with the belief that if I had that six-figure income and that law degree, that I was never going to have to deal with all this emotional trauma that I didn't want to deal with.
Right.
I didn't realize until I started healing over the last few years how much I told my clients, you don't pay me to be emotional. You don't pay me for my personal opinion. You pay me to look at what the law is and to advise you accordingly. And I had completely shut myself off emotionally. So when people ask me why I went to law school, I keep thinking like there's a million answers to this question and they all tie in to, you know, needing to get out of the traumatic life that I was in and thinking that was going to be the way. And you know, as well as I do, it doesn't work that way.
Not only that, I think with trauma, it's like, well, you don't want to deal with your trauma. Well, you're dealing with it either whether you like it or not. You're just dealing with it poorly.
Yeah, exactly.
And it really has a way of eating you from the inside. So I'm sorry that you went through that.
It has made me who I am. Yeah. And it's really interesting because I don't know what life looks like without it. Yeah. And I go back and forth because obviously I would give anything that I could possibly give to have my dad back with me.
Right.
And at the same time, I love my life and I've loved the life
it would
that
change
I've created.
Everything.
And
that's the ironic, right?
Here.
Isn't that the ironic? It's
yeah.
not silver lining. That's the ironic thing about trauma. It's like, well, I wish that would go away. I want to remove that from my life. Well, then it changes your entire outcome, who you are, where you are, what you're doing, you know? So it's kind of a scary thing to think about if it ever happened.
Yeah, you know? It really is. It really is. So yeah, that kind of led me to the legal side of things. And
you do a lot of criminal law, if I remember from your bio.
Criminal and immigration. Yeah.
Okay.
And I work a lot where they intersect. So what I love and will, no matter how much I get into coaching and speaking and NLP stuff, I will never give up this part of my practice where I consult with criminal defense attorneys to help them find immigration safe plea bargains.
Oh,
so
okay.
I help them craft the language in the plea agreement and do things like that to make sure that this person who stole a Snickers bar isn't getting deported back to El Salvador. Because
Is there a lot of an immigrant workforce in Vegas?
A ton.
Yeah,
there's so a ton.
A big area of practice, sure.
So yeah, that's kind of how I got to the legal field, and then I got out of it by healing. I had a breakdown because a lot of times that's the only way to realize that you need help.
Things come to a head.
Yeah.
Right?
And my ability to compartmentalize became a problem. I had always been able to go to work, be where I needed to be at work, separate that emotional side. And some stuff had happened where I wasn't able to do that. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't able to breathe. I wasn't able to work. I was having panic attacks and anxiety attacks. And
stress does that.
And yeah, really needed. And a lot of it came from my entire life had been graduate high school, go to college, graduate college, go to law school, graduate law school, take the bar. Well, what's after the bar?
Right.
Well, it's just life.
Right.
Right. And then eventually you wake up and you're like, every single day I'm living this life. And when does it change? When does that happy moment come?
Right.
So
how old were you at this point? Let's say you're probably
34.
34. Okay.
Yeah. And, and to be clear, like I love the law and I love being an attorney. So when I talk about this, a lot of times it feels like I'm saying, man, I wish I never would have gone down this path. No, I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
I just know it's not my forever passion, right? It's not my forever life. Right. So during this breakdown, I started going to therapy and I remember being in my therapist's office about 6 months in and opening up to her and saying, all I've ever wanted to be my entire life is successful. And I feel like such a failure.
Right.
And she stepped back and she said, you have a six-figure income. You have a law degree. You're the first person in your family to go to college. You're respected in your profession. What exactly does success mean to you?
Well, that's objective success, right? She's looking
exactly.
at it.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean you feel successful.
Exactly. And so she asks me that question. And I didn't know it at the time, but it is that question that created the life that I have now. I didn't know how to answer it. I didn't know what success meant to me because I thought that it was everything that I had, right?
That it would happen, right? You would get to that point.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like, I'm there. And you feel it and it's all good. Doesn't
yes.
happen
and
that
like,
way.
And doesn't like happen. Roads open up for you and you never right. have to worry about anything financially because
yeah.
six figures, I don't know where six figures became the benchmark to success from our generation, but it is not that much money. Like you can't retire on six figures.
You can't even pay your bills on six figures
no.
in a lot of parts
and then,
of the country.
But you create this belief as a kid that like, I'm going to make six figures and the world is going to be great, right? Like
oh my
I'm going to be able to like fly private jets everywhere I go.
That's
and go
the
on
thing.
I
think I sat down with a friend of mine, like in middle school, and we were like, if we could make $250,000 a year,
yeah.
we'd have like a mansion with horses and servants,
yes.
you know?
Yes.
And then life happens and you have kids and you have, now I don't know if you do or not, but you know, I have kids in college and high school and I mean, shit, and I don't live in Vegas. So you want to come to New York or San Francisco, your money's going to, you know, and
oh yeah. We are so lucky here in Vegas. We have such an amazing cost of living. And thank you to all the people who come to Vegas that makes it to where we don't have a state income tax because
yeah.
the casinos support our state.
Yeah. Keep it coming.
Yeah. So,
what made you go to Vegas?
It's all about a boy, right? There,
okay.
there was a boy and
okay.
I thought that was the future and it wasn't the future. And then Vegas became the future. So yeah.
Did you go to law school in Nevada?
I went to law school in Michigan.
Oh yeah, sure. Let's go all over the place. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I
so
wanted to go to Boston. So
okay.
I really thought I'm a huge Red Sox fan.
Okay.
And
I won't hold that against you, but I'm not a big baseball person anyway. So,
Yeah. I normally get kicked off podcasts when I say that, but
that's
no, I thought that I wanted to live in Boston and then I went to law school in Michigan and two things happened. I didn't see my family for 3 years. Unless I went home, which was once
yeah.
a year. And Boston's expensive, man. Like
yeah,
when you set
is.
This dream.
Welcome to the East Coast.
Yes. And so I started looking. I had this bleeding heart dream of being a public defender. And
oh, that's a good, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to pay my bills.
So
I'm
not paying your bills, right? Exactly.
Yes. And I looked at the public defender's office in 2011 when I was planning my internship and all of this stuff. And they were starting at $42,000 a year. And
there
I'm like,
go.
Am I going to live in a cardboard box on the street? Like
$42,000 probably hard to live in Vegas on $42,000.
Yeah,
it's impossible in
you
Boston.
You can't.
Yeah.
And so I started looking at public defender's offices closer to home. And Vegas actually has a really good PD's office. They started in the high 60s. They
oh,
have
wow.
a great investigative branch. Like it's unlike most public defender's offices, and yet it's still stressful and awful. And I respect anybody who can do it for long term because
right. it's
yeah.
hard to do it long term.
So it was kind of the perfect storm of what brought me here. The boy and I broke up before I moved. And then I was like, screw it. I'm going on my own because I'm strong and can. So I
yeah.
moved out here and I love it here. I do.
Nice. Nice.
So
nice.
Yeah.
Sorry. I went on that version.
No, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So I'm, in the middle of mental breakdowns and trying to figure out how to act like I'm okay. Because as attorneys, we can never tell people we're not okay. That's just not allowed.
Right.
And I'm in therapy and I opened my own firm and I'm doing anything that I can do to get that success back. And someone hands me this flyer for when I see it in my mind, it almost has like that angelic glow, around it.
Yeah.
That said success boot camp. And I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I waited for. Right?
Right.
And my attorney brain goes to like, I'm going to be there for 20 minutes. They're going to give me a bullet pointed list because I'm an attorney and everything's organized. Right. And it's going to tell me step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 success. And,
it's going to be everything I've waited, right? Yeah.
And I went in and for 4 hours, I sat there and listened to my now coach and NLP trainer and mentor and friend tell me that the reason I don't have everything I want in my life is because I'm in my own way and I get to decide when I get out of it. And I thought, well, this was a waste of money, right?
Right. That's what you're thinking then at that point. You're like, what the hell am I doing here?
Yes. Like, yeah, what, sure. Like I, and it was a moment that changed my life. I jumped all in. I was intrigued by the way the mind works. I was intrigued by this belief that we, human behavior, we think we're communicating and yet we're going through life so many times without an actual connection with anybody because we're so involved in what's going on with us that we don't step out of that enough to connect with others. And then creating this world, right? As an attorney, it was amazing to me to think that I could put people on the stand and that 10 people could see the same event and describe it in 10 different ways. And then being able to understand that we process information through the filters that have been created in our mind through our experiences. And so all of this information gets processed through those experiences and each person remembers something different. Once you understand that, you become a powerhouse in the attorney field. Once you understand that people communicate through their model of the world, not your model of the world, then all of a sudden you're able to really get to the bottom of things that had escaped people previously. And so that's really why I dug into NLP was I needed to fix my shit.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be a better attorney. And at some point in time along the way, I started to realize that my life was changing and that I now had the tools and resources and experiences to help others do the same. And very similar to what we talked about before, as an attorney, if somebody who is not an attorney had come up to me and been like, hey, you know, your life could be so much better than it is right now, I would have been like, you have no idea what the hell my life's like.
Right, exactly.
But I have those experiences to be able to tell people, like, if you don't absolutely love what you do, which the sad reality is that I've talked to more miserable attorneys than happy ones. God.
They're all over the place. Yeah, and most of them are lying to themselves saying, oh, I love practicing law.
You know, and as I started these conversations, I was really afraid to have these conversations because who wants to be the attorney that tells people that maybe the $250,000 loan debt that they have didn't create the life they thought it was going to?
Yeah.
And the most powerful conversation that I had came from somebody who was a mentor to me when I first passed the bar. And we were talking about 3 months ago. And I said, you know, I feel like there's two types of professionals in the world, not just attorneys, but highly educated professionals in every field.
Right.
That there's two types. There's the lifers, the people who have found their passion and they've been lucky enough to live in it and be happy. And then there's the people who wake up at some point in time in their life and wonder whose life they're living.
Yeah.
And his response to me was, yeah, I really envy those people. And I said, which people?
Right.
And he says, the people who love practicing law. I've never known what that feels like.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely in the second group. Definitely.
And I'm like,
in the second
how
group.
Though? Like, how does somebody practice law for 30 years and never love it? Like, it's
because they're afraid to make changes because they feel trapped in what they're doing because they're afraid there'll be a failure in their mind. There's all kinds of psychological reasons.
Yeah. So we now have the ability as attorneys who can relate to highly educated individuals to help them understand that they have the permission to live the life that they want to have, not the life that they told themselves that they were committed to. And now they're just stuck there and they have to make the best of it.
Right. And that's a consciousness and an awareness of, yes, it can be different. It's not like that way all the time. And it doesn't have to be that way. Like, I think some people think that's the way it is. Like, you're supposed to be miserable. What do you mean practicing
exactly.
laws like that?
Well, and where do we relate over as attorneys? We relate over a drink and battle scars, right? How many times have we been in a situation where as attorneys, we're talking about the worst days that we've had and we're finding a way to laugh at those because if you don't laugh, you'll cry. And then that becomes your reality. And then some crazy ass lady comes in and says, hey, by the way, you don't have to live this life. right? And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I don't have to do this. Like I can actually enjoy what I do. When did that become a thing? And seeing people make that shift is just so powerful.
Yeah. It's funny. I have a good friend of mine who's, you know, she's a big networker or whatever, but she used to practice law and now she does recruiting, but only for partners and things like that. And she meets all these people who are like, yeah, I'm miserable or whatever, but it's really like this at all firms. She's like, no, it's not like this at all places. It's the place where you are. That's the problem. And there are places that are more nurturing and more caring and people don't stab you in the back. And, you know, assuming they liked practicing law, you know, and I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, it's funny because I don't know a lot about NLP except what I've read, but I have been through some of Landmark. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of it is that, you know, life has no meaning and everything you do has no meaning. It's given meaning because of language and our experience. Yeah. Some people don't like that. It makes them very uncomfortable. They're like, well of course control. Life has meaning. What do you say? God doesn't exist. I was like, what did God have to do?
Got into this conversation with somebody because we all want control, right?
That's the biggest issue, right?
We all want control.
Right.
So what do? We hand over that control to anything that we can to say, well, that's just the way it is. And I grew up in a very, very religious area. Let's be clear. I had 1,200 people in my town and 9 Mormon churches, like very religious.
Wow.
And peer pressure for me wasn't drinking and going out partying. It was going to church. Like that's what everybody did. Right. And eventually you wake up. So I have this religious background and the idea of, I stepped away from spirituality for so long because I had related spirituality and religion and I no longer wanted to be a part of that world. And as soon as I was able to find a place that allowed me to believe whatever I wanted to believe and know that it was okay not to know what I knew, right?
Right.
I don't know what I believe and that's okay. And finding a place that allows me to explore that was a lifesaver.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21,000. That's LAW to 21,000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
I'm in a clubhouse room and this was probably a week ago. And there are moments where you have this thought process that goes through your head and you're like, if I say something, I'm going to ruin relationships that I've spent so much time building. So I can either open my mouth or I can walk away. And I left the room because I was like, this is not the time or place. So we're talking about what you do when you just don't have it. Like, how do you wake up in the morning and how do you push yourself through those days that you just don't feel it? And somebody says, well, I just realized that God has a plan and I step back and let him take control. And I thought, what the freak is wrong with you? And to me, this religious background has created this belief that there's like this master puppet that has everything, like this map is already made for you.
Of course.
All you have to do is show up and
well, it's
whatever.
The parenting syndrome, right? You want a parent. You don't want to be at the top of the
exactly.
aisle. Exactly. Too much pressure and responsibility.
And I started going back and forth because my platform is design your life and live it, right? You design the life you want to have. You create your life. You create your future.
Yeah.
And then I balance that with the belief that there is this power that I truly believe in, universe, God, whatever you want to say. And how do those things go together? And the reality is, like, you listen to that intuition, you move forward, you find out what is congruent with what you're congruent with, what's in integrity for you. You don't just sit back, stop and say, well, God's going to make something happen. Like, that's not the way life works. No,
if you're on a lake in a lightning storm,
yeah,
you know, you can pray to God. You still got to row to shore, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and he gave you the boat. You,
get out of the lake. I gave you the boat.
Yeah, exactly. I saw a meme the other day. So whenever anybody starts talking about, like, God is a trigger word for me, because when somebody starts down that conversation, I have to step back from the conversation and figure out, are they trying to convert me? Are they trying to make me listen to this victim mentality? Or are we going to have a real conversation? And until I figure that out, I'm halfway checked out. But somebody shared a meme a couple of days ago that said, God never gives you a dream that's within your budget. He didn't check your bank account. He checked your faith. And I thought, how amazing is that? Because how many times do you hear people say, like, God will provide a way if it's going to happen? No, he gave you the ability to do it, right? He gave
tools,
you the ability to live your life. So anyways, not to make that religious. Just
no, look, I grew up in a fairly religious Jewish family, and I was very active in my temple and all that stuff. But as I got older, you know, I'm much more agnostic than I am religious, because I think a lot of the very religious rituals are silly. Like, you know, I think a lot of things that bring culturally and spiritually and values and stuff is very good in religion, but, you know, we also kill each other over it. So, you know, the whole thing in Judaism where, you know, you're laying down, you're praying and you do this, kind of, you know, like, you know, whatever. I'm just like, you know, we have all the tools, everything's going on, and to each his own, it's fine. But as I got older, I just, it didn't make a lot of sense to me, you know? So it's tough. It's definitely a difficult road to hoe with a lot of that stuff, but, you know, you got to find a place that you feel good about it, not just accept it, like you said, because your parents told you to go to church every Sunday.
Yeah. And I mean, like, out of the religious context, just into life, like, that's how we live our life so many times. It's like our parents tell us something and we just accept it, right?
Yeah.
Society tells us something and we just accept it. And I was talking to somebody in the last interview about community. And I said, that's what's so amazing about events like this and podcasting in general, is that you meet people that challenge you and say, I respect the hell out of you. And that's not how I see the world. And then you start thinking, wait a minute, not everybody sees the world the way I do. Let me think of this, right? And so just getting in, surrounding yourself with people who have that better way, who have that different way,
different
not necessarily
way, right?
Better, but different way.
Right.
And then being willing to allow yourself to step into whether or not you resonate with that, instead of just pushing it away and saying, well, clearly you're wrong, because that's not what I think.
Right. Exactly. I've met some of the best people that I would never have connected with or had real conversations with if it wasn't for podcasting and really the pandemic, you know, because then I got on Zoom and everything I do remotely now. So I connected with people that I couldn't do an interview with a guy in London or Australia even before I was doing on Zoom. I was doing it in person. I had a mic down the end of the table here and you would come in, you'd sit with me and we would record, but we didn't do video. You know, it was like, Joe Rogan has a studio. He does video. I can't do that, you know? And now it's kind of connected the world. It's the silver lining of 500,000 people having to die. So,
yeah, I mean, there's silver lining in everything, just as we were talking about previously when it comes to trauma, and you either choose that silver lining or you don't. When we were doing the little connection, get to know everybody part of this event, and somebody was talking about, I think it was Nicholas that was talking about all the things that he had been through. And he was talking about choosing your attitude. And one of the very, very first things that I ever took in when I started this NLP journey was that choice is a powerful thing and suffering is always optional, right?
It's like always optional. Even people say, you don't know what I'm going through. I can't feel this way. It's easy for you. People say, especially in Landmark, they did that. That's easy for you.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody says it's easy. It's got to practice it, but freedom of thought. That's what makes us human.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And Landmark is NLP based. And
it is very
I get really defensive when people talk about where they're going to go for their NLP training, because just like anything else, you get what the trainers are willing to create. And so finding that place where your bullshit excuses are not going to be accepted, regardless of how big your check is that you write, that's the only place that you're going to find true transformation.
Yeah. You got to find that place. Yeah. Yep. So if somebody wanted to learn NLP and learn about it, where do they go? Is there the NLP Center of New York or something? I mean,
so first of all, this is what's wrong with, well, one of the things that's wrong with the coaching profession in general is that there's very little regulation and very little, you know, and coming from the legal field where everything is so highly regulated, that was so hard to get used to. If anybody listening is really interested in learning more about NLP, reach out to me. I have connections all throughout that are constantly growing and changing, and we can get you in touch with the right people to make sure that you have the right experience. Because especially that first introduction to NLP, it's either going to make or break your belief in the power of the science.
So we'll put some links in the show notes to.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So let me make sure that I know where you are. So you're practicing law, but you're really doing it on a consulting basis with other criminal attorneys?
So I have that part of my business. And then I also have a full criminal defense and immigration practice.
Oh, you do.
As well.
So you're going, helping people, going to court. And that's the one thing I don't do is actually, those are two areas of law that I don't do at all. Not even like I do some employment law light. I do certain things light, no criminal. You don't count municipal court as criminal, do you? Somebody gets a speeding ticket.
Yeah, sometimes. Like speeding
ticket
a little bit.
I've been roped into those
like,
a few times. You know,
they're awful.
Yeah, they're terrible. You know, just so you can be seen, heard first, you know, so you go and talk to the prosecutor.
Unless you're doing traffic tickets on like a super high volume to where you're 100 or 200 a day, you're not going to be profitable on it.
Yeah, there's a couple of firms out here that are like, you know, they go to the blotters, they get all the information, they're mailing out 20,000 pieces a month.
Yeah.
They're sending young attorneys to all the courts, you know, at night.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
That sounds horrible to me. Yeah. We do. So where I am now, when I was with a big criminal defense firm and I handled all of their sexual assault cases and I would be okay to never go back into that world again.
Yeah,
I do low level felonies, low level, theft, drug cases, things like that. And then misdemeanor charges. The majority of my clients on the criminal side have immigration concerns as well, though.
Because they're immigrant workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, so are you also dealing with companies that want to bring people over, like the casinos and stuff, or not as much?
So I don't touch that side of things. Like that's a whole different area of immigration. I do have partners that I refer, or I guess not partners, colleagues that I refer those cases to, but I decided never to delve into it. It just sounds awful to me.
Yeah.
And
I have a couple of colleagues. That's all they do on the immigration side. They do the other side of it. So, and then you have a coaching practice, basically?
I do. So my coaching practice was started a year ago. And really it just came from, like I said before, this idea that what I've learned has made such a positive impact in my life. And the idea that we get to define what success means to us, and then we get to create a life that fits within that version of success. And then we get to constantly challenge that version of success to make sure that we're making the changes that we want to make when they need to be made, so that we're not getting addicted to the dopamine high that comes from accomplishing things and thinking that that equals happiness.
And then it changes and then you're not accomplished. So you have a good month and you have a bad month and life is just a roller coaster.
Yeah,
I think that's
absolutely.
One of the challenges of practicing on your own.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, that's business ownership in general, right? I remember being in a clubhouse room listening to Elon Musk talk. And obviously, like, this was not me connecting with Elon Musk because I am nowhere near. But we're listening to him talk and somebody asked him, you know, what advice would you have what piece of words of encouragement, that's what he used. What words of encouragement would you give to a new entrepreneur? And his answer was, if you need words of encouragement, don't become an entrepreneur.
Right.
And I agree with that and disagree with that at the same time. That resilience can be built and it can be created, but you have to be willing to step into the uncomfortableness of not knowing what's going to happen next. That security, working for somebody else is false security anyways.
Very
but if you allow yourself to convince your mind that it's real security, then you're going to stay there forever. Once you realize that they're dealing with the same shit you are, right, they're just doing it better and hiding the fact that, you know, you just never see it. Right. Then all of a sudden, being an entrepreneur doesn't sound as scary because you have more control.
Much more control until you get that pink slip and they're like, listen, we're really sorry, but I know you're 52 and you're an attorney and you have no book of business because you've been working on all of our clients. We're going to have to let you go. And then you call someone like me and say, hey, can you hire me? I'm like, well, do you have a book of business? I don't have any clients. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't have work for you, you know? Yeah. So it's definitely a vulnerable position for attorneys to be, you know, once you get into your 50s, by the way, it's like this black hole of life. You can't, you don't go and get a job. There are no jobs that you would take, right? Because they won't pay you enough. And yeah. I mean, they just don't exist. And, you know, and this whole part of society that's become like solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, so we'd have no benefits. We have no, there's no corporate structure in society to support everything that's going on. Although we all want to make our own lives and do our own things. It worries me about, I'm not saying everybody should work for a company. They shouldn't. But I think that like when our parents grew up, you know, there were pensions and you worked for a company and that's what you did. Yeah. With a large portion of society, it drove a lot of the economics of our society. Now we have no pensions. Even if you did, you got to put your own money away. You're paying for a lot of your benefits and it's very expensive for insurance. You're sending your kid to college for god awful amounts of money that they may never make back, you know, overinvesting. I mean, this is, and I don't know where we're going with all this stuff, you know?
Well, and this is one of those things that COVID brought to light, right? How many people had that secure job?
Yeah.
And until COVID happened.
Or they had a business that cash flow was hiding everything.
Exactly. Boom. And two things happened in COVID. Well, lots happened in COVID, but two main things that relate to this conversation where people realized that that security was false security, that their company that they were working for was just as vulnerable as anybody else. But then the other side of that is the corporations learned that they could accomplish more with less. Yeah. They learned how to become more efficient and more effective. And they realized that they didn't need four people in the office to file back, you know, a file. So then that became, oh, I'm going to go back to work as soon as COVID. Well, are you?
No, because the job force
your corporation up. Just realized that they've survived the last year without you.
Yeah. They're going to lay off of their workforce.
What's going to make them think that they're just going to pay you out of the bottom of their heart? Like, that's not the way businesses work. So it's driven this reality that people now get to say this thing that's been in the back of my mind that I've really wanted to do my entire life. Like, maybe I could actually make this happen because that security that's been telling me that it's not going to happen is gone.
Or maybe like the name of my podcast, they have to make it happen.
Yes.
They don't have another choice, you know?
You don't have another choice. And we are amazing at survival.
Oh, yeah, we are. I mean, look, it's not for everybody. And I know that, but sometimes you don't, like you said, you don't have a choice. Look, companies are starting to operate their workforce. So they have people that are hourly workers and they don't qualify for benefits because they don't work enough. So they split it up. And Disney's famous for that, right? They don't have, I'm sure Walt Disney in the 70s, all of his people bought homes and they had lives and things like that. Nowadays, they don't. I think they laid off 30,000 people during the pandemic. So that's scary, though, if you think about where our society's going and how that's going to resolve itself for the next generations, because we can't all be entrepreneurs. I'm sorry. We just can't.
It doesn't work that
way. It's not going to work that way. You need people, you know, you got to create jobs and have people working for you. And it just, so.
And like you said, not everybody's meant to have, that entrepreneurial life. I was doing a podcast interview and they asked me what their platform was, that they thought that building a home-based business was the only way to create true freedom. And they were like, do you agree or disagree with that? And I said, I disagree with that. I think first you have to define what does freedom mean to you, right? Yeah. And this goes into this conversation, like freedom to me is this entrepreneurial life. And with that comes the question of, am I going to pay my payroll next month? Am I going to, you know, that those questions of, God, sometimes you just step back and I'll have this philosophical conversation with people in the NLP space. Like sometimes you just wish, like, could I go back to the place where I didn't know that I had full control over my future?
Could I just go back? Ignorance is bliss, right?
To the place, yeah, where I thought that that was as good as it was going to get. Because as soon as you've unveiled that curtain and you know that you have full control over your future, then everything becomes possible. And when everything is possible, then you're trying to find that balance. And this is the entrepreneurial curse between being grateful for what you have, growing what you're working on now, and having that foresight for the future at the same time.
A lot of stress and pressure.
And that's not for everyone.
No. And you know, one of my objectives through the podcasting and the materials I put out and what I do as an attorney is to just get these people, listen, if it's something you have to do, right, because your job's dried up and you can't go back at 50 or whatever, then spend some time putting some basic principles together to increase your chances of success, right? We're both lawyers. Can't guarantee anything, right? But increase the chances of you being successful. Put some things in writing, write a business plan, take a course, do some things online, you know, learn about what you're doing and if it's what you should be doing. And maybe you got to pivot, you know, and,
yeah.
You know, a lot of this was an awakening for a lot of people, you know,
resilience. Yeah, it was for sure.
Resilience is something you can learn, but it might take people a lifetime.
And you have to be willing to learn it, right? And how many
open
times?
Open to it, yeah.
Yeah. And how many times have we been in conversations where like we ask for somebody's feedback and then they give it to us and we're like, no, I don't want to hear that, right?
Well,
like,
because you're not ready to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, you're a teenager.
Or you don't
like
really
this.
Want it. Like
Maybe
you want somebody
want it,
to tell
right.
you how amazing you are and yeah. they're saying, hey, by the way, you're failing over right. here.
That's not
and
what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that. You just don't know. Like you just don't know. When
exactly.
do you acknowledge? And this is
we're
really where-
for that.
Yeah, this is really where this passion came from too, is like, how many people have we seen in our profession or our colleagues or our families where they're leaving a job because they're unhappy, right? And they're like, it must be the job.
Right.
And so they go do something else and they're still unhappy. And they're like, well, maybe it wasn't the job. So it must be my relationship. So let me just separate myself from everybody that I know,
right.
call my divorce attorney. Because if I just get alone or with somebody else, then it's going to be great. And then they're still miserable. And they're like, maybe I just live in the wrong city, right? How many of these are we going to go through
yeah.
before you realize that you're the common denominator?
Right. It's from the inside out, not the outside in.
Yeah. So helping
that's
people
hard
save
for a lot
that,
of people though, Amber. I think that's hard for a lot
hard
of people.
For everyone. Like
yeah.
it's the most challenging and important conversation, you know, somebody described it once in a book. The Road Less Stupid was the book. And he talks about that starting point, like being honest about your starting point and where you are and
right.
how you would never get in a car, put in your GPS a destination without putting in the GPS your starting point.
Right. Yet
that's what we do in life all the time is
of
we
course.
Overestimate where we
no,
are.
We're blindfolded driving the car.
Yeah. Exactly.
And we get one life, by the way, as far as I know, I don't think we get to do this over again. So.
As far as we know. And if we do, we're not, who knows?
We have no consciousness of the prior one. So.
Yeah. So you're in your car and your GPS is telling you to turn right because you didn't tell it a starting point and right is like the Pacific Ocean. And now you're like,
and you just go.
Right. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And you just go because that's what GPS said. But that path isn't for everyone. And this is one of the biggest things is there's this message out there in the entrepreneurial world of find somebody that has the success that you want to have and then model them. And while that's amazing advice, there's a piece of that that's missing.
Yeah.
You have to model them when they were you.
Right.
Not model them when they're them. Because
right.
if I look at the Tony Robbins of the world and I start doing what Tony Robbins is doing, I'm going to fail miserably.
Right.
I have to look at Tony
That's
Robbins when
you.
Nobody knew who he was
right.
and what he did then, and then figure out how I bring my little piece of that into it. Right. But so many times new entrepreneurs say, well, this person has it all figured out and that person's successful. So since I'm failing, it just must not be for me. And they don't see the 7 years that person ate ramen noodles for breakfast.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to figure shit out.
Right. And it's all like anything else. It's practice and trying it and failing, and failing is really a learning, you know, an opportunity to learn and grow. But there are a lot of people that maybe we all need therapy, like you said, but
I mean, for anybody listening,
to find themselves.
Yeah. Anybody listening is probably like, man, this is the most depressing conversation ever. Just know like being on entrepreneur
this is an
is
honest
great.
Conversation. This is not a depressing
yes,
conversation. And,
exactly.
and by the way, I know we're getting the notes and the messages and so forth to turn this off, but I thank you for being, you know, completely honest and open and vulnerable and sharing your story, because it's valuable to other people that are, that might be going through things and they can't, you know, they don't know what to do or they're afraid to do it and whatever. And I think you coming on and being genuine, and I'm sure this isn't the only place you've done it, you know, I thank you for that, because I think it's brave. And I think it's, you know, it's caring about other people. Like, that's why you share what you go through. It's because it helps other people. And I think that's a lot to be said for that. And I thank you for joining me and coming on and continuing to watch Friends and all the things.
Yes, there. Always Friends. I appreciate you having me on. It's always amazing to connect with other attorneys that are showing that you can do other things in your life as well, that it doesn't have to be an either or. For anybody who's listening, if it's okay with you, I'll share with you a link that you can put in your show notes. If anybody is saying, man, how do I find my starting point? The first exercise I give any of my clients in any of my programs is an exercise called the Life Wheel that's going to help you understand what areas of your life are truly in need of some attention. And that's a free resource that I offer.
Great.
As a thank you for having me on the show. So I will share that link with you that you can put in the show notes, and then people can go find their starting point and just approach it. If you're listening, approach it from a non-judgmental status. Like, you can't change it until you see it. So be honest in that exercise and allow your life to grow.
Awesome. Amber, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.